on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard a big show on The Big Fish. Stinker, Steve Starling's back, Kendall Kramer from Coffs Harbour, and our first cast is with Cole the Waymaster Trenneman on the Mid-North Coast catching stonker whiting and just back from Mondurin with a big fish tale to tell. It's all going well for you, Trenno. You deserve it too, mate. You're a good fellow.
Yes, oh, thanks, mate. Good morning, listener. Listen, mate, I'll tell you what, what's his name used to say, it's all going on, Richie.
It's all happening, Richie.
Oh, Richie, yeah.
Hey, where are you at the moment? Tell us about what you're doing on the beautiful Mid-North Coast right now.
Well, I went out the other morning and just had a go with some flatties on some big bent minnows and that, and I end up with four whiting, and they were 40-plus whiting on this 150 bent minnow. And I went, oh. So I've come back here today with the proper whiting gear, and I've got half a dozen. I was just saying to you before there, I got a 50-litre esky, and, mate, these are 43 and 44-centimetre whiting. They're absolute stonkies.
They're the best fish to eat in the estuary, aren't they? They're just fantastic.
Oh, mate, I'd rather chase them than flathead any day.
And they can be so hard, too. That's the thing. You know, they're not easy to catch. You make it sound easy.
It's been a grind this morning. I've had quite a few. It's just not... There's a bit of a nor'easter, not too much. It's only a couple of knots of nor'easter blowing at the moment. And the tide hasn't quite turned. Once this tide turns, they'll go off their nut because the prawns will come up, because they're coming up to a duck, and they'll just lift and start moving. There's not the action on the surface like you would normally see, like, you know, brim up sipping on little prawns and shrimp. So there's none of that at the moment, the odd bit. But the whiting that I have got so far, I've just crash tackled it. Just come up behind and gone bang, and that's it.
Fantastic. You're using a walk the dog technique?
Correct, mate. Yeah, right up, and just one of those 70mm walk the dog type ones, yeah.
I've been having great success on the little Pro Lure shallow crankbaits, the tiny little ones. They're so small, you've got to throw them on about 4 or 3 pound line of braid, which makes it very sporting. Catching, you know, mullet up to 60 centimetres, big flathead up to 70 centimetres and explode onto them. Lots and lots of brim. The brim just cannot get enough of them. They're so good. And you don't get that RSI in the elbow from doing the walking the dog technique. But the whiting don't seem to go them. They like that imitation of a prawn on top, don't they? They scoot them out of the sand where they live in those coastal lagoons where you're fishing, and then they're up, they pop to the top as their safety mechanism. Then they chase them and suck them in or smash them. And I reckon I'll have to go back to the walking the dog lures to actually catch the whiting on these little lures. Is that a fair call?
That's a fair call, mate. The other one too is I sometimes have got them up on the clear, if you can get a clear one with a little bit of colour on it, or a straight white one, in a bent minnow, about that, probably that 80 to 100 mil. And I found them pretty effective on the whiting. Well, mate, I was using the 150 the other day, and I'm pulling 40-plus whiting.
Fantastic.
On
well, a bent minnow really will spend a lot more time under the water than on top if you're fishing it properly, won't it? Just under the water.
That's correct. And you pause them a lot too, because when you're fishing for flatties, you know, you're not winding them flat out and back like you're doing with the surface popper, like you walk the dog style.
No,
or little cup face ones.
Yeah. It's as good as it gets in the estuary doing that, isn't it? That is such addictive fishing, so exciting. It's you never know what you're going to get. Like the brim will smash it, but also the big flatties will do a somersault and smash, take off.
Oh, mate, they're very spectacular when they come up and smash the lure. And unfortunately, sometimes you do part with one or two. I have lost one this morning to, when they're not cheap either, them lures. I have lost one this morning to a very hungry flathead, probably about mid-80s, and I did get a look at him before he powered off and took my lure with him.
They're really dear. They're over $30.
Oh, some of them are. They are. They're not a cheap man's sport, let me tell you. There is some other imitations that do work occasionally, but and cheaper imitations that do work occasionally.
We're talking about the Japanese ones, aren't we?
That is correct, mate.
You know,
yes,
like Bushy swears by them, and he can make lures, as you know. He is the best lure whittler in southern New South Wales. He's very clever, and he said, I can't get these right. You know, I've got to buy the deer. It galls him to have to do it, actually, but he has to buy the dear Japanese ones. We're speaking with Trenno, who's on his secret spot somewhere near the Camden Haven, somewhere on the Mid-North Coast, chasing trophy whiting, stonker whiting on lures, walking the dog lures. Of course, you're just back from a great trip to Queensland, to an impoundment in Queensland. The photo you sent, I'll put it up on the Big Fish podcast site. It is really an awesome, awesome barramundi that you caught. That one, that's your fish of a lifetime, Treno. Well done.
Well, mate, I've got a 122 in the salt water, but that 101 there would outweigh it, I reckon. Oh, mate, it was huge. I couldn't lift. That's as far. If you look at the failure, that's as far as I could lift it. I couldn't get any further up, and I got it in a tiny little drain, probably about 10 meters wide by about I suppose 25-30 meters deep. And I'll actually send you a photo of where I got the fish, and you'll just sit there and scratch your head saying, "There's a meter fish sitting in that." And I'm, well, mate, they are there. And it went meter one. I got four other fish that were in the 70s, probably that ran at 74 to 78 mark. Lost 12 fish in that mid-80s to mid-90s in timber, and they're just cranky fish, and you'd try and stop them because you're using light gear.
How do you stop them? I mean, how do you stop them?
Well, I've watched videos, and a lot of blokes throw their bail arm open and just go and chase them, or back the drag off and go and chase them until they get in the clear water, but these trees and these dams, they just don't end, mate. There's just acres and acres of trees that stick out of the waterline.
And how light were you fishing when you caught the 1 metre barra?
Mate, we're up right up in the shallows, up in amongst the weed beds. And we sort of started, when we got there, we had a bit of a plan that we were just going to...
Oh, but better name the dam, first of all. I know you're not going to name your secret whiting spot where you camped there talking to us right now, but you can name the dam.
Oh, like, I call it Mondi Mundi, mate. Lake Mondurin up there in beautiful Gingin. And we're up there the start of last month, I suppose. We're up there for a week, 7 days fishing. We had a bit of a plan that we were going to sit there and do the points and that sort of thing, but that got a bit boring just sitting there throwing and throwing. So we decided to go on a... We got nothing the first day. Second day, what worked for us up there at the time were there were Berkeley shimmer shads, 6.5 and a 5.5 inch in a silver mullet with a green tail. It was like a chartreuse tail. They worked when we were throwing them around in the timber. The other one was the TT frogs, the 4-inch frogs, mate. They were. I end up for the last 5 days. I just threw surface, and that was it.
They're the ones frogs. Where the hooks that are up in a recess inside the body, are they?
Weirdless, mate. You can throw them right up. Like I've seen, you watch the videos, and you watch them as they pan in on these fish sitting in the middle of this weed bed, and you just see a fin. I've seen that myself, and I've thrown in there, hooked them up, can't get them out. But you know, you hook them up. You saw when you're sitting there and you're fishless, you go, well, that's another victory. I've got a hook up at least.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're in the tight country and it's almost impossible to get them out. That's a beast of a thing. That's incredible. But those lures with the hooks recessed up into the plastic body, is the hook up rate good? Because I've never really used them. They look fantastic.
On barramundi, they do work, mate. You can slow them down or speed them up to whichever way you like. And when they see the frog is tough, but it's still soft enough that when they bite down on it, it exposes the hook. There's a little trick that I do too, and it's not totally weirdless after that. I get a set of pliers, two sets, and I just open the gape up just that little bit so the point sits by about 0.5 mil proud of the plastic so it doesn't dig into the plastic. And that way I get a better hook up. But, of course, I'm going to catch a lot more weeds and lily pads and all that sort of stuff. So that's what you're sort of fishing over is lily pads. And you cast it up, right up in this stuff that you would never, ever think about. If you look at it and say, no way can I get a lure in there, that's where they sit.
Yeah, and that they were pioneered by bass fishers in America, weren't they? Those style of weedless frog lures with the hooks recessed up inside the soft rubberized body.
Oh, definitely, mate. Yeah, no, the American bass boys, they come up with a lot of good stuff. They got a lot of time to sit and think about it, and they make all these things up. But some of the stuff works and some of the stuff doesn't. But those are a definite must if you're going up there. I'll give you the tips, boys and girls, if you're listening. You're going up there, watch the videos by all means. But the videos are usually 6 to 8 weeks behind when you're going. Or they've done them in October and they release them in January, February. So a lot of the stuff that they're using is now they've been seen by too many fish. Three lures that I would pack to take up there. There's three lures I would take. One is the finesse, the frogs, the 4-inch white in the white or in a green colour. Doesn't matter, either or white is probably my favourite. With a heap of 6-0, what they call them, weedless hooks. You can buy them in either a chin lock with a weight or without a weight. So that's up to me. The second one is a plastic, which would be either the Berkeley Shimmer Shads or the Shimano 130mm slick rigs.
And are they a paddle tail plastic?
Paddle tail plastics, yep. Mate. And you can buy them with different coloured tails on them now. Like, you can get a chartreuse green, you can get a red, you get a pink.
Why is chartreuse such a great colour? I mean, there's the most famous fly, the Clouser minnow, which has an upwards riding hook, which is very good for fishing in weedy and snaggy conditions. It's traditionally chartreuse and white. It's a fantastic fly. It's been the best streamer fly forever in salt and freshwater.
Yeah, no, look, chartreuse for some reason in freshwater is like a big beacon to them. Come and eat me. It just wobbles around and it gets their attention, if you know what I mean. A lot of blokes are making lures up there. I ran into a really lovely bloke, Scott, from Guru Lures, and he makes a lot of hard body stuff, and I bought a bit of stuff off him. While
Where's
I
the nearest put... town? Is he in the nearest town, is he?
He's in Gingin, mate. He lives in Gingin. He's fished the dam for 25
years. Isn't it interesting? We've done these stories before around the fisheries in the New England Northwest as well. You know, there are people who spring up, these cottage industries spring up with people making beautiful lures for cod or for the barramundi there at Gingin. Because they're in that local impoundment, it's such a tourism attraction, isn't it, Mondura? And I mean, it's just fantastic that there's that massive economic spin-off for you going up there to catch a giant barra and, of course, let it go. It's still there. That one that's a metre 30 centimetres.
It was a metre one, mate, not a metre 30. It was a metre one.
Oh, sorry.
My biggest in the salt's 122. So,
oh,
yeah.
Right. So this is still a metre. I mean, that's amazing. So, you know, to have that fish still swimming... for someone else to try to catch, although you've educated it a bit, I would say.
Yeah, well, look, mate, and like that's a third lure that I'd take up there would be. I'm sort of giving up on the hard body. There was this Scotty makes a really nice product, and I did get a couple of fish on, and I lost one of the lures that I bought off him. But I had the privilege of sitting down with him. He's a lovely bloke, and where the highway bridge goes across the top of the dam, which is about I think it's 45k up or 50k up the dam. We're sitting underneath there in the shade on a hot summer's day, having lunch, sitting in the water, talking, and he's telling us all about the barra, how they react in Mondurum Dam, what lures are working, what lures are falling out of place, and which is half of my tackle box I've got to get rid of now because they don't work.
But do they get used to them? Do they see them and they get wise, do you think?
Well, yes, they do, because if you take it, Mondrum on any one single day, a bit like a Wonga, it'll have anything up to 20 baits on there. Not that you'll see them, but you get back to the bait ramp, and on both bait ramps that are there, there's 20 cars or 15 cars. So they get to see this every day. Not only that, when it comes up to the full moon, like everybody starts fishing the full moons up there. I like it a little bit quieter. I fish the dark of the moon, and we did all right. We got 10 into the boat between the three of us, so we done pretty well.
That's great. And you're so honest, too, because we had that episode last year, and I think the headline was Treno got skunked when you went to one of these.
Mondurum, yes.
Was it Mondurum?
That was in Mondurum again, yes. We went there.
And I copped a bit of criticism over that. You know, people said, oh, who's the expert? But this is a truthful fishing show. This is what fishing really is about. Fishing's not catching. These things, you know, that's why it's such a trophy to catch one over a metre, because you had that whole trip and your mates and you went up there and you spent a fortune and came back without touching a scale. I mean, this is the reality of it. So, and I think the other thing you did that gives it away a bit, you went right up a little tributary, didn't you, where you could almost not squeeze the boat, and that was where you got some success.
Well, we're up. I'll let everybody know, mate. I'm not. We tried the basin. There's a few good spots in the basin where we did get a couple of fish to start with. But a lot of our other fish, and I mean, I lost probably a dozen and lures as well, just to fish bashing up. If you ever look at a map of Mondi or Mondurum, you go there and you'll see where the Bruce Highway goes across the river that runs in it. We're another 10 or 15K past that. So we're doing 90K round trip a day.
Wow, that's certainly hunting them out, all right. So you're up a little tiny tributary and bang, this thing hit. Take us through the fight of the one that went over a metre.
Well, my mate Collie, I'll give him a plug. He's an absolute legend. I call him the goat now. Anyway, we're sitting up there and he's got his little seat, his seat up the front there, and he sits right on the bow of the boat with his electric and his foot control. And for casting deck up the front is a little bit wider, so I can stand behind him. So I'm sort of looking over his head. So I wait for him to cast because we've got a bimini up in the background, as you would have seen in the photos. Anyway, so I'm standing behind him, and he'll cast, and then we're only using light rods too. We're only using sort of 10 to 20 pound rods and 5,000 size reel with 30 pound braid, 60 leader. But you know, because that's to stop the rasp off by the big girls, or any of them actually, they do rasp it up a fair bit. And with that we sort of said, right, I saw where Collie cast, and I said, you didn't quite get to this little tree, mate. I could see this little tree moving. And he said, oh, look, I said, I think there's a fish up on that. So I went up on there, had a throw, just got next to this little twiggy tree, bang, and it come out of the water, and I said a few explanatives.
Was this on the surface frog or one of the paddle tail soft plastics?
No, this is on the frog. This is on the frog, mate. Yeah, this is on the frog.
Wow, and a big explosion?
Oh, massive explosion, mate, and it come out of the water pretty much straight away, and because of the size of it, it only came out halfway out of the water, and I'd just gone a few words, and I said, this is a big one, and it sort of played up. All it had to do was run left or right 2 or 3 metres, and it was straight in the weeds, and it was a hell of a battle after that. But he came straight at the bait, went past the bait, took another 20, 30 metres of line, done another couple of big jumps, and then come down, and he started coming back towards the boat, and I said to me, mate, quick, get the net. We might have an early shot at this. And we did. Got it in the net, nose down, tail sticking out. Anyway, what happens, it started, because it was so green, it started jumping again. It threw the lure out. It got caught in the bimini top. Anyway, I said to me, mate, crikey. Or a few words to that effect. Anyway, he's got this thing, and the barrow's turned into that, and there was nose starting to face out, and it started to use its tail as leverage. So I grabbed the side of the net and just threw it, and we just rolled it over into the boat, and went bonk in the bottom of the boat, and it ended up just blopping, bung and banging around the bottom of the boat, and I'm just sat there. I sat there shaking for about a minute, just thinking, what just happened? And
so it was
taking all in.
Very fresh when you let it go, by the sound of, very healthy.
Mate, we quick photos on the brag mat. You could see on the brag mat shot, she was as deep as the brag mat. It was probably about 5-6 inches across the back. That's how thick it was.
How many pounds do you reckon that is? Would it be 50 pounds?
Mate, I can lift a 25-kilo jew, right? I can lift. That was just awkward, and it was... I reckon it was a good 25, 28 kilo.
That's just incredible, isn't it? What a beautiful fish. And she went back none the worse for wear. Of course, they're all stocked in there for people
That's
to catch.
Right. As we do, we let all of our fish go. They're not really good chewing out of the freshwater. It's just a great place to go and catch. Now she's sitting up there waiting for someone else to get her.
Well, I can tell people where she is because I've got the map up, the Google map of where you were. So you've gone right up through the basin, right up the arm of the... I think it's called the Colan River.
Yeah, Colan for Colin, that's it, yeah.
Colan River, K-O-L-A-N, past a place called Colonga, and then the arm goes right up, and the river goes under the Bruce Highway eventually. It's a tiny little stream up towards the Bruce Highway where you were, and that's a long way to go from the boat ramp to catch one.
That is a long way, mate. We're using just over a tank. Just over 25 litres, probably about 30 litres of fuel a day.
Well, I've just given away the spot where if you want to catch a metre barramundi, go and do what Cole did and you'll catch the same one. Hey,
all the little tributaries off to the side there, just for everybody. Mate, you just follow them up. It's fish up as far as you can. If there's a hole, you can't push any further with the electric, and there's a hole up there, throw up in there because there's barra up in there, mate. They'll sit in a metre of water as long as there's food. And, mate, every one of those little... as you go up past the bridge and all those little creeks off to the side and bays off to the side, they've all got these big garfish living in them and bony brim.
Well, they're snub-nosed garfish, are they?
Yeah, big freshies, mate. They're like a cigar.
That's their tucker, isn't it? And it's not far past the Sunshine Coast. I mean, it's you know, reasonably close, particularly listeners there on the North Coast and mid-North Coast where you are. It's the big fish. And we're speaking with Cole, the Waymaster Trenerman, who's currently out in the boat. You can hear the water lapping. He's up in a little lagoon that comes off a lovely mid-North Coast river system. It's sandy flats and a nice part of the world where the giant whiting are biting. And they're on the prawns, aren't they? I mean, a lot of people, until you walk around in that sort of environment don't realise that there are big prawns live under that sand, and the whiting spook them out, and then when they see your walk the dog lure on the top, that's where the prawn goes for safety, doesn't it? Jumps at
tries to clear them, and then goes, hits the sand and buries straight away before they can get them.
That's right. So they've got to get it straight away. So that's why they come up and take surface lures, and you'll hear them actually sucking in water. That's a really exciting thing to do. Does that work all year round, or is it only when the water's warm like now?
No, I usually stop fishing for them about end of April, May, depending on what the water's like. By about May, your water's starting to drop down. See, at the moment, I'm looking at my screen here. Oh, crikey. Just 2 seconds, mate. I've got to move the electric. I'm sitting about 0.4.
No, don't run aground.
No, I'm just saying the tide looks like it's starting to drop, and it's about 0.4 at the moment. There's a little channel not far from me.
Oh, we've been talking for a while. If you ran aground, and that you could blame me. But how shallow? I mean, what's the optimum depth?
Look, half a metre to a metre I like, because that gives me access with the boat. As far as that's concerned, I can access that sort of water. Oh, that's better. That's 0.7. I'm a bit deeper now. But, yeah, I prefer that sort of half a metre to a metre depth. And the water's got to be clear. If it's cloudy, well, you don't really, when I say cloudy with a bit of fresh water in it, they don't really come up on it. I don't like fishing around the full moon. They don't like, because the prawns don't move, so it makes them really hard to get. Not that you're not going to get them. It just makes it harder for you to get them. But you'll still get them on baits, but you won't get them on the lures.
So what I've got at the moment, a dark of the moon, is it?
We're coming up to the dark, mate, yeah.
Ah, look, Trenno, it is the best estuary fishing ever. Tight lines, mate. Thanks for sharing some of your great adventures. We'll put the photo up of your beautiful metre plus barramundi at Mondarin up there past the Sunshine Coast. And well done, Trenno. You've really done well.
Nah, I'm Monday, mate. I'm back in November too. I've already booked my trip. The wife said I could go, so you beauty.
All right. Oh, you've got the leave pass. Happy days. Oh, tight
yes,
lines,
mate.
Buddy. Tight lines.
See you, mate.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Take me where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, and leave me up a river somewhere. Heaven's up an estuary, a river or a creek. Your best mate and some two-stroke, enough to last a week. A yabby pump, a crab pot, and your favourite fishing gear. And don't forget your stubby holder to hold your yummy beer. Take me where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, I'll be up a river somewhere. No need to get too serious, just relax, that's the plan. You can have your lures and plastics, I'm an old bait man. Mullet gut and prawns rotting in the midday sun, a piscatorial perfume only appreciated by some. Let's go where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, and leave me up a river somewhere. Now the world's gone crazy, people blowing themselves up. They need to sit on Sawtell Beach and watch the sun come up. I guess we take for granted this wild and beautiful land, so let's celebrate our freedom and enjoy it while we can. Let's go where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, and I'll be up a river somewhere. Just leave me up a river somewhere.
The Bard of the Caravan Park, good old Errol Grey there. And a creel stuffed full of adventures still to come on The Big Fish. Stinker has had the best trip ever. He says that every week. It just keeps getting better. And everyone's visiting Fingal Bay to say good day to our old mate. Also coming up, Starla with some great brim fishing techniques. And Kendall Kramer from Coffs Harbour. It's all coming up on The Big Fish.
Oh, get out of it, bloody seagulls.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott. How you doing today?
I'm very well. As your song says, you have tips and trips. Did you have a trip?
Oh, look, I had a fantastic trip. But look, I must say, I've been visited through the week by two gentlemen on two different occasions, Daryl and Bill. They've made a connection to me through this program, and so they've made an effort to come and sit down with me, which I really do enjoy. Anyone thinking of coming at Fingal Bay, I'm easy to find. And we sat down and we had a really, on a couple of occasions, had a really, really good old yarn. And there's nothing beats a good old yarn, you know that.
That's fabulous. And isn't it great to live in a town and you've been there for so long and you've really got a great sense of community now that you all have your Thursday night get-togethers and all the rest fun at the club. And for someone to just walk into Fingal Bay and say, hey, I'm looking for Stinker.
Yeah, they all point in the same direction. That's where he is, up in the hill.
That's lovely. And what did you talk about, Stinker?
Oh, just all sorts of things. Fishing is sort of the central focus, but about life and Fingal Bay and Port Stephens and, you know, how everything's unfolding. Just a general old yak. Never get too heavy on any we don't talk politics. That's no good. No politics doesn't get discussed in the Wirra shed.
Smart. Absolutely, yeah, smart.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's out of it. That's about the only thing we can't talk about. But, oh, look out, fishing. Oh, gee, I had a week. I had friends come from, well, as far... it's really interesting, this, Scott, because one fellow rung me up from Brisbane, who I didn't know this person, and they said, are you John Clark? And I said, yes. I said, I am. And they said, this person said, well, I'm John Clark too. And I said, well, good on you, mate. You know, that's great to hear. He said, our grandfathers were brothers. I said, oh, awesome. So then he started to tell me that he has retraced the family history way back to the mid-1700s, back to Ireland. I quite frankly didn't have a clue where I come from or who I was. And it never really bothered me greatly. But John Clark has done all the work. And, I found out that I've had relatives in and around Tweed Heads that I never knew about, which has been really great. So that's been wonderful. What's happened then, Scott, he's contacted me, said, look, my sister, and of course related to her as well, and her partner are coming down the coast. Could we drop in for a few days? And that was early in the week. And I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. Let's do it. So they've not long gone home, and I'm exhausted.
That's great. So he shook the family tree, and you fell out.
That's correct. Yeah.
And his name's John Clark. His name's John Clark.
Yeah. So when I introduced him around Fingal Bay, and I said to all my friends, I said, "This is John Clark." I said, "Oh, not another one. We can't handle two.
Does he look like you? Is there any family resemblance?
Nothing at all.
He's a lucky man.
Yeah, that's right. He hasn't got that to worry about. But they towed with them from Townsville a 17-foot boat. And, of course, it became very obvious that they expected, well, they didn't really expect it, but it was thought that...
Yeah, well, the polite thing to do would be you to take them fishing.
That's unwritten, but certainly noticed. So I said, would you like to go fishing with that 17-foot boat? Yes, they said, that's a good idea. Let's do that. So we launched in Nelson Bay. This is a couple of days ago, and out through the heads. And instead of going north to the Broughton Island, I said, we'll go right to a place called Shark Island, which is off Fingal Island. And there was a howling southerly, and the sea was pretty solid. It was about 3 metres sea. It might have even been a little bit bigger. And I said, right, if we stay on this side of the island where it's safe and we're going to catch a fish and we'll have a good time and we won't be knocked around. So, oh, that sounds good. So I got there nice and early in the morning, a little bit late, really. I should have been half an hour earlier, but never mind. And I cast out, and as soon as the cube of yellow tail, that's what I had for bait, I reckon it sunk about a metre, and bang, this almighty fish took off. I was, oh, this is awesome. He says, how long? He's come from all the way from Townsville. He says, how long's this been going on? I said, oh, for a while. Anyway, I got this fish. It was a 3-kilo snapper. And I said, oh, that's good. You know, at least he caught something. And then, bang, his rod jumps out. And he grabs hold of the thing. Oh, dear. Was it? And there was a 4.5-kilo snapper. And I'm thinking, this is good. And I had another rod in that rod holder while I was mucking around. And then, bang, it opened. That great noise. And the rod's really buckled over and the line's like a violin string. And I said, there's something pretty solid on here. So I lifted it out of the rod holder. And Buddy had swum through some kelp. And the line had gone through the kelp. And he had one of those electric motors. You know, that's the first time I've ever been in a boat with one of those electric...
Bow-mounted one. Yeah, there's the spot lock thing is great, isn't it? The electronic anchor. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said, this is pretty cool, this thing. I said, well, can you motor with that thing over the top of this kelp? And I'll hopefully we'll be able to lift whatever's out of it through out of the kelp. He said, we can do that. So he got behind the machine and off we started to go. But then it come loose anyway. And then it took off again. I mean, with an incredible power. And I thought, this is a solid fish. So I finally got it halfway up under the boat and I'm looking down at it and it's sort of got a brown back. And I'm thinking, what is this? I said, oh, I think it's a mulloway. And then I looked at it again. I thought, no, it's not that. And then it come further up, and I said, better give me that landing net. So I got the net under it and lifted it into the boat. It was a 62-centimetre red-throat emperor.
Oh, what a beauty. And he's come from the tropics to catch a tropical fish.
He said, oh, I've come all the way from Townsville. He said, and that's the best one I've seen for years. And I said, it's probably come down here with you, you know. Followed you down along the coast, and it was a really beautiful fish. So that evening, this was early in the week, that evening I filleted and boned and skinned all those the fish, and then I grilled some, and the others I put in batter in about 1/4 inch of hot oil, and then I cooked them nice and golden and crunchy, and put them on a bed of fried rice with some plum sauce and a bit of it was just beautiful.
Oh, Stinker, if this is the hospitality you're showing to visitors to Fingal Bay, our listeners will be lined up at the gates to the town. They'll be taking a ticket. We want to see Stinker.
yeah. Well, look, if anyone wants to, I'm at 5 o'clock every Thursday. I sit up as a little tavern down the end of the road. And I sit there and I have a few beers and I yarn to anyone who wants to have a yarn. And I tell you what, it's for the highlight of my week. So when Thursday comes around, I think I really step a little bit higher because I think it's Thursday.
That's great, Stinker. What a story. And thanks for looking after the visitors. Tight lines, buddy.
Hurry, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Steve Starling on the beautiful south coast of New South Wales is getting ready to load up the boat with his fly rods and his spin rods and every weapon imaginable to chase the beautiful brim of that lovely part of the world. Steve, one of your videos on YouTube really got me thinking about using hard bodies and soft plastics for brim. It was a great episode. Good morning.
Good morning, mate. It's good to catch up again.
It is good to catch up. I've been talking to your missus a lot. She's doing wonderful things, getting more women into angling.
Yes, she's doing some great stuff with the ladies, that's for sure.
It is. It's amazing. And how good are they? It's just extraordinary. I think it's the best thing that ever happened in the game. But this really interested me because it's taken me, I'm not even going to say how many years, to really work out hard bodies and brim. I've caught plenty of brim on soft plastics, and your regular tail squidgy dynamite, everyone knows it's just like brim lollies. They just suck them down. They can't get enough of them. But hard bodies, it's really interesting, isn't it? And you really showed how to do sight fishing for brim with hard bodies and lures on a beautiful river in Tasmania in one of your recent YouTube episodes. Take us through that one.
Yeah, I mean, Tasmania is just such a fantastic place for brim fishing. It's probably got some of the biggest southern black brim in the country, and it's got plenty of them in a lot of rivers. And the interesting thing with brim down there is that no one targeted them very much, especially not on lures, until the last sort of 15 years or so, and now it's become really popular. But sight fishing for them, I think, it's the pinnacle of brim fishing for me. And a lot of people have got the notion that if you can see a brim, it can most likely see you, and it's going to be very, very difficult to catch. And a lot of people actually think that brim they can see are uncatchable, and there's good reason for that. You know, historically, we did struggle to catch them in marinas and places like that where you could see them swimming around. They're very, very switched on and very situation aware. But if you can stand off at the right distance and put a lure exactly the right distance in front of them and do the right thing with it, if you get it all just right, they'll actually rush over and pounce on it. And it's one of the most exciting things. And one of the most thrilling ways, I think, to catch a brim is to actually see it light up. You see its body language change and its fins flare, and over it goes and crunch onto the lure. The whole notion of brim being shy and retiring sort of vanishes in a couple of seconds. They can be quite aggressive little predators when they want to be. I do it with both hard bodies and soft lures, but it's all about that stealthy approach and using the lightest tackle possible and getting the lure in close enough to the brim so that it becomes aware of it, but not so close that it crashes down on its head and spooks it. So a little bit of accuracy involved as well. So ticks all the boxes for me.
It's The Big Fish and Steve Starling, and Starlo's Get Real YouTube channel is full of fabulous stuff. It's good fun, but it's also, there are a lot of tutorials as well. But as he does, it's never a lecture. It's, you know, if you want to try this, have a look at how I do it. What I thought was really interesting, because you've done a lot of fly fishing for these wary creatures as well, but you had a hybridized sort of fly lure. What would you call it? A lie. I don't know what you call it. But that was really interesting too.
Yeah, that was a fly jig. So what I do is I took a very small lead head jig and actually dressed a fly on it. I've been tying a lot of these shrimp patterns that I learnt from BWC flies up on the Central Coast there. They sell.
Yes, we've had Cherie Forbes and Brett on the program on many an occasion. They're just amazing.
One of their patterns, a prawn they tie, that's very realistic, and it's got little plastic eyes and legs and everything. And I'd been tying them and catching plenty of brim on them on fly gear, and I thought, why not just tie a couple of these on jig heads? And I tied a couple and looked at them, and as you do, and you go, wow, that looks really good, threw them in the tackle box and promptly forgot about them for the next 18 months. And I was ratting through my tackle box down in Tassie and found one and thought, this might be the place to try that. Well, they were all over it. That was the Scamander River up on in northeastern Tasmania, up near St. Helens, and it's loaded with prawns. And, they didn't say no to a prawn fly, that's for sure.
It was really interesting when you found where they were hanging. You'd get 40 or 50 fish, small ones to real big ones, on a snag. But they were quite snag-oriented, weren't they? They didn't like to come too far out of their house.
No, well, it was interesting that day. And, you know, I've always been a little bit ambivalent about the whole saloon of tables and everything. You know, sometimes it seems to work and sometimes it doesn't. And usually I think it's overridden by things like tides and time of day and that kind of thing. But the Scamander is actually closed at the time. They've since had some big rains and it has opened, but it was closed and non-tidal at the time. And there was a real activity period during the day. And when the fish were inactive, they were tight back in the snag. They were at the base of the snags and they were just hanging there, and it was very, very hard to tempt them. But later in the day, something kicked into gear, and I did look later, and it did roughly tally with the peak fishing time on the lunar tables, and they came off the snags, moved out in front of them, and became much more catchable. So that was really interesting.
It's the Big Fish and Steve Starling on Sight Fishing for Brim, and you're in a beautiful river full of southern black brim. Have you seen much difference between the species?
Yeah, look, they do operate. They seem to operate at a different speed. The southern blacks like life in the slow lane. One way I always like to describe it is if there's a big snag sticking out into the water and the current's running quite hard, a tidal current, the yellowfin will, especially the active yellowfin brim, will sit in front of the snag on the pressure wave and actively hunt, and the black brim will tuck themselves back in behind it. So, yeah, black brim seem a little bit more lethargic. They like life in the slow lane. They take a little bit longer to kick into gear. It's funny, even when you hook them, you can tell they kind of prop and shake their head for a couple of seconds and then take off, whereas a yellowfin brim is straight into overdrive as soon as you hook it. So yellowfin are a little bit more active. With lure presentations, I find you'll catch plenty of yellowfin brim just on a steady, straight retrieve, particularly on a hard body. You almost never catch a southern black brim unless you build pauses, constant pauses into your retrieve. They might only be half a second, but you've got to stop that lure every now and again, and it usually gets taken on the pause or just as it begins to move again after a pause, whereas that's not quite so critical with yellowfin brim. Having said that, I think that pauses can be really, really useful on retrieve for yellowfin brim as well, but they're not absolutely essential like they are for southern black brim. But yeah, look, yellowfin brim are definitely catchable sight fishing on the flats. If anything, they're probably even that little bit more aware than the southern black brim. They're a bit flighty. Maybe there's more predators up in this part of the world. We've got mulloway and big tailor and lots of pelicans and cormorants and things. So I think those yellowfin brim, when they're up in the skinny water, they're on eggshells. Anything can scare them. You don't want to drop a tackle box in the bottom of the boat or rattle your anchor chain over the gunwale or they're gone. So you do need to be aware that they're very, very spooky. But having said that, you get that lure hard or soft into the water a couple of metres away from them and get it moving, and 9 times out of 10, they'll charge over for a look. It's up to you then to convince them to eat it.
And you've got a lot of experience with black brim being a South Coast fisher. Do you have hybridisation or crossover? Do you have waters where there are lots of yellowfin and black brim, or is it mainly the black brim?
Yeah, I live very much in the mixing zone. From, say, the Clyde River at Batemans Bay north, it's very much dominated by yellowfin brim. And from south from there, the black brim become more and more prevalent. But we have a lot of the icols, the intermittently closed and open lakes and lagoons, little lagoons that spend a lot of time close to the sea. A lot of those have both in it. And, yes, they have hybrids. It's the scientists are actually doing a big study on black brim at the moment. I've heard informally off the record from some of the boffins that they think there might be hardly any pure either black or yellowfin brim in this part of the world. There's been so much hybridisation over the years that they've all got a little bit of both genetics. And I catch some sometimes and I look at them and go, now what are you? I'm not quite sure.
So they're very close if they can interbreed like that. Have they stopped netting those little systems? How is that situation now?
Yeah, unfortunately, quite a few of the icols are still netted, and it's a worry. I mean, I can understand from a prawning point of view, they're very, very important prawn fisheries, and I don't have an issue with the commercials being allowed in. with some limitations, of course, to target the prawns during the summer and feed people and everything. But yeah, chasing the bream and the blackfish and the mullet and everything in those little landlocked waterways doesn't seem sustainable to me when they spend sometimes years at a time closed off to the sea. And yeah, quite a few of them are still. Some of them are recreational fishing only, which is great to see. But there's been no expansion of the RFAs for many, many years now. In fact, there's been minor erosion of them. But
with the opposite happening just across the border, we see such brilliant fisheries like Mallacoota that where thousands of tons of black bream were taken out. Now you can see schools of 400 across the flats. Different matter trying to catch them, Starlo. they've all got university degrees.
They have. They've seen a lot of lures, those ones. Probably seen more lures
well,
than you and I have.
When the vibes came out and they were such a sensation, you'd bag out. I went there with Bushy, and then they got wise to that, and they all told each other, don't get that thing that goes through the water. They're no good anymore. So now it's the bend backs. Now I'll get used to the bend back. Although I think the surface lures are harder for them to work out because they don't get a good look at them. They're after that fleeing prawn that's been scared up out of the sand, and they just whack it, don't they?
They do, yeah. Although, you know, as you and I have discussed, you do miss a lot on the surface. They can. It's exciting though when they come up and you hear them kiss.
Oh, yeah, it's fabulous.
That slurping noise.
Oh, I've gone to a little hard body with a very shallow bib, a tiny little thing. It's got an excess, extra shallow. I won't mention the manufacturer, but they're pretty reasonably priced, and it's just so small. You've got to throw it on about three or four pound line, and the brim, the hookup rate compared to the walk the dog or poppers is just extraordinary. They just get pinned every time. I very, very rarely lose them. Catch lots of flathead on them too, but not the whiting. The whiting do like the surface presentation. So, but if you want to catch brim, yeah, those little hard bodies, I've finally worked it out, I reckon, Starlo, until they get wise to it. But it's the best fun you can have, isn't it?
Oh, look, it's just awesome. One way to improve your hookup rate, definitely, on the little surface lures, on the walk the dog lures, is to hang a set of those assist hooks on the back, the little stingers on the Dacron droppers. That makes a massive difference. I started doing that for the whiting, and it probably increased my whiting hookup rate by about 25% to 30%. But it also works well on the brim. The big trick with, and that's what I'll be doing later this morning. I've got the boat ready to go, and I'm heading out to throw a few surface lures for brim and whiting this morning. And the big trick is trying to pick which species it is behind your lure when you see that bulge in the water or see the first.
That's right. Do I pause?
Yes.
Is it a brim? And if I pause, I'll hook it. Or if I keep it going, I'll get the whiting. If I stop
exactly.
it, the whiting will take off. It depends on what you want. I guess I'd keep it going because you want to feed a whiting.
That's what I tend to do. But then if you're getting a lot of those, the kisses and the slurps, and it's quite obviously brim, it's just too tempting to just pause it and let it hang there. And what happens then is those little assist hooks drop straight down under, and they're usually on a little bit of red cord. And I think the brim see them like the legs of the prawn, and they just grab it by the hooks, and they are so sticky sharp.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Tips from the master. I'll let you get on the water, Starlo. I hope you get a nice feed of whiting for you and Joe, and tight lines. And thanks for sharing that. I'll definitely be pulling all my surface poppers apart and putting assist hooks on them. You've convinced me. That's probably why my hookup rate is so bad. Tight lines, mate.
Good on you, mate, and tight lines.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Last week on The Big Fish, we left you in anticipation, waiting on how they went at Lake Conjola. We had Laurie Anderson and Kendall Kramer, two of the competitors in the Flatty X tournament, the WRFL, the Women's Recreational Fishing League event at beautiful Lake Conjola on the south coast. Kendall Kramer from Coffs Harbour and Bellingen region. How did you go?
Oh, Scott, it was an absolute ripper of a weekend. So we had 13 women all through the weekend fishing, and so we have our mentors and our mentees, and they group up. So over the three sessions that we had, there was a lot of fish caught. Actually, it was an excellent weekend. We had, I think there was somewhere around about between 15 and 20 fish caught all weekend between all of the boats, which is a really, really good number.
I know you're a great flatty fisher at Yeranga, which is Butte habitat, and hopefully those techniques worked in Lake Conjola, but you can share some of the ideas with us next week on targeting flathead on soft plastic and lures. Kendall?
Oh, you bet, Scott. I actually took out Champion Mentor over the weekend, so I'd be happy to share what I did and how we got the win. So, yeah.
Sounds great. Winners are grinners. Catch you next week on The Big Fish, Kendall Kramer.
Thank you. Thanks, Scott. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.